Hey guys, do you like heavy metal? Do you like video games, comic books, movies, theme parks, or even cool TV shows? We've got the place for you. Metal Geeks. Time to rock out with your geek out. Here are your hosts, Kerry the Metal Geek, Dave, and George. Geek it out, fellas.
Welcome, my friends, to episode number 156 of the Metal Geeks podcast. I am one of your hosts. I am Kerry the Metal Geek, along with...
Brutal Dave is here.
Brutal Dave is in the motherfucking house.
It's been a minute.
It has been a minute. We don't have George motherfucking Tripsis, but... So that means the two metal geeks are here, and the other geek is not here.
Yep.
So, we have a lot of metal to talk about then, I guess, tonight.
I suppose.
Yeah. So, it's been a while since you've been on the show. We've been to some concerts recently.
I've been to several. Yeah, since I was last on, I've been busy and or sick, and or family members have been sick, and or other wild shit going on. So
you mean life?
Yeah, lots of it.
Yeah.
Yep.
That sucks sometimes.
So, yeah, it's been a while since I've been here. I have managed to do a few fun things.
That's good.
In all of that time.
Let's talk about that.
So,
let's talk about these concerts we've been to.
Well, several of them we were both at since I was last on. I don't know how much opportunity you had to talk about the Dark Tranquility show.
We did a little bit. A lot of the concert talk, the experiences has been on MSRcast, our sister show, with Sean the Metal Pigeon. But we did talk about Dark Tranquility and the Amorphous show a little bit. Sean was not a fan of Amorphous's performance that night.
I was gonna say,
were you?
That I didn't think they were bad, but I felt like the level of performance from everyone else was so good that it Amorphous's set suffered as a result, was how I felt. Now, this was my first time to actually see Amorphous, so I don't have anything to compare it to. It was my first time to see all of those bands, actually.
Comparatively, the performance last year was better, but their performance this year was bad.
It wasn't bad, but I
see your point, yeah.
It's just everyone else was that good, was how I my experience was. I thought everyone did a really good job. I felt Amorphous did a good job. It's just I felt like their performance was the weakest if I had to pick one. And it wasn't a bad performance. It was just the weakest of the four.
So the show was Omnium Gatherum, Moonspell, Amorphous, and Dark Tranquility. I'll start off by saying I think the highlight of the evening for me was probably Omnium Gatherum. They commanded that stage. They had such a presence. They had such energy.
They did. And it was cool, like, kind of on the coattails of getting to see Insomnium earlier this year, because there's some crossover there.
Yep.
One of the guitarists, I can't remember his name, but he is in both bands.
Right.
And so it was cool to get to see him in both contexts very close, so kind of back to back, because that was like in, what, June or July? That Insomnium came
I believe
through.
It was June, yeah.
And so it was cool just a couple months later to get to see him again in a slightly different context. They were kind of... I think they were maybe who I was looking forward to seeing the most.
Mm-hmm.
But my favorite performance, I think, was probably Moonspell. They were incredible.
Yeah.
And like I said, it was my first time to see any of these bands. Been a fan of Dark Tranquility for... I don't know, 15, 20 years, somewhere in that area, and actually got to talk to Michael Stan after the show was over. Yeah, you had to cut out.
Yeah.
But he hung out and talked to people afterwards. And so I got a photo with him, and I told him, I was like, you know, I've been a fan of you guys for a really long time, but this is my first opportunity to actually get to see you. I mean, I know they come around fairly frequently. I've just never been able to make it before.
Right.
And so I told him that, and he goes, well, I hope we didn't let you down.
Nice.
Like, okay. But no, they were incredible.
You guys did a great job. Adequate job.
They were incredible, though. They was a really good performance.
The thing about that band is their performance and their stage presence and all that stuff, they're a much bigger band than where we saw them at.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yes, absolutely.
They could definitely sell out a bigger show.
Absolutely.
Have a bigger... last time I saw them, they had a big stage... was at the Scout Bar, too. I don't remember who they were touring with, but it might have been Soilwork and somebody else. But they had a a big screen behind them like they did this time, and it just feels like it needs to be in a bigger venue.
Yeah, yeah.
But not the Scout Bar is bad, or by any means. But I'm excited next year.
No, it's not bad. It's just a small place.
Yeah.
I mean, we can be honest about that.
Yeah.
I mean, we love Scout Bar, go to a lot of events at Scout Bar, but it's a small venue. That's just a matter of fact. It just is. So
it's a weirdly shaped venue, too.
Yeah.
It's very rectangular instead of square. You know what I mean? You're used to
seeing... It's like an L-shaped.
Yeah. Yeah. But the stage area is more... It's longer instead of, like, shorter and fatter.
Yeah.
Like a big... It's a little strange.
Yeah.
But I don't think they ever expected to have this kind of big band in there, you know?
Yeah, they've been pulling them, though.
Yeah.
Like, I
for years, they've been doing it. Many, many years.
Yeah.
And not just metal. They have a lot of, like, hard rock and even, like, I've seen, like, rap, you know, groups, like, big rap groups playing there and that kind of stuff. It's like, people are coming out there. It's not close. For you, it's close.
It is for me. It's the closest.
A lot of other people,
around.
It's not.
Yeah. I mean, it's just a couple miles from my house, so it's real easy for me to get over there.
Yeah.
We did talk about that one. I was just thinking of cool stuff that I just happened to go to at Scout Bar because it was close by. We have talked about it. The Power Glove show.
That's right.
Yeah, that was cool.
Before we get off Amorphis real quick, I do want to say that they're already coming back next year.
Yeah.
They're co-headlining with Delane, who I've seen Delane, and I'm not super excited about that.
Mm-hmm.
I can't say that I'm a fan of them.
Yeah.
But the opening act,
Annika von Giersbergen,
acoustic show, touring. There's going to be a VIP package. That's going to be my holiday present to myself, is getting to meet her finally. I've seen her live once. I got to see her with The Gathering.
Okay.
Maybe 2000, 2001, it was Milwaukee Metal Fest. I can't remember which year it was. I'd have to go back and look what year they were there.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, at a festival like that, they got to play, 25, 30 minutes.
Yeah.
But maybe they played longer. They're one of the headliners, so it might have been longer. They were fucking brilliant, though. But I've never got to see her any of other projects. I mean, plenty of live stuff, but when she got to play with Devin Townsend a couple years ago at Prog Power, I'm like, I would have been fucking brilliant, but...
Or with Arion, or...
Yeah, that's never going to happen in the States, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Which, speaking of, Arion just put the remastered version of Into the Electric Castle, and I bought the vinyl of it. I think that's one of the bands I'm really going to collect vinyl. Mm-hmm. Some of its stuff is like out of print, you can't find. But it came with a download code, and there it sounds really good. That album definitely needed a remaster. And he's going to be doing some shows in Denmark next year. I don't remember exactly where. I think so. And they're going to be doing that album in its entirety. I was like, okay, that's brilliant. But tickets sold out already. I can't go.
Oh, you were going to go to Denmark anyway for that, though, right?
It was very tempting. It really was. I have a buddy that I hung out with in Chicago that used to be... He's in a band called Bloodthrone. And he fucking just went... He just gets up and goes off to all these fucking shows. So he just went to the Eson Emperor reunion show with, Leprous and stuff.
Fuck, I would love to see that show.
Dude.
I would love to see that show.
Yeah, I'm going
to
go. I'm like, really?
Leprous and Haken are playing,
Austin or Dallas? Was it Austin?
In Austin.
Yeah.
And it's just not feasible for me to go. I was just thinking, two days before I saw that.
Leprous played here, last year, too.
Did they?
Yeah.
Just, 2 days before I saw the ad, I was like, I would really like to see Leprous play live. And then I saw the ad, and it's like, oh, it's Austin, and it's not feasible for me to make it to that one. So
it's soon-ish, too.
Yeah, right? It is. It's real soon. It may have actually happened this week. I'm not entirely sure.
You might be right. But you know who did announce the tour together? Flesh God Apocalypse
and Hypocrisy. Definitely want to go to that.
We're definitely going to that. I haven't seen Hypocrisy. It's been a,
God,
been
it's
a 2003 10 years. Since
I've seen Hypocrisy, for me.
The last time I saw them was with Children of Boredom.
The last time I saw them, that was the only time I've seen Hypocrisy, and they were playing with Children of Bodom and Dimmu Borgir.
That's
and
right.
And Nevermore.
Engine Room.
And Nevermore.
That's right.
Well, not where I saw it, because I saw it in Dallas.
Right.
So...
That was an awesome tour. It was. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was a I won tickets from like the local like public access radio metal show up in Dallas. I went to that one. So very cool. That was cool.
Man, yeah. I mean, my wife is a big fan of Hypocrisy and Peter Tacturne. So mm-hmm.
Well, he's great. I mean, he how is. Many awesome projects he's even a part of.
She's even a fan of Pain, which I can't say that I'm too much of a fan of that. But mm-hmm.
I'm not real familiar with it. I haven't listened to much of it to really form an opinion.
It's not horrible, but this is not great, in my opinion.
I'm excited to see Flesh God.
Yes.
I've never seen them before, and I've not read reviews of live shows they've done, but if they're anything like the powerhouse that they are in the studio,
yep,
that's going to be something to see.
And the opening band on the tour is a band called Animus, A-E-N-I-M-U-S. So I didn't know about them when I saw the tour announcement. There was a link because it's the what's the name of the compilation album? Death is Just the Beginning tour.
Mm-hmm.
So they put a new compilation out in 2018, and they're on there. They're very progressive, like a heavy cynic.
Okay.
I really liked them. A lot of that, you know, open bass sound, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
That's like they're really good. And there's like a nice little segue in the middle of like an acoustic piece, and I'm looking forward to hearing more from these guys.
Okay. I'll have to look into them.
I did see another show. The show we went together, but we'll talk about that. I went to the Karak Angren.
Yeah, that's another one I wanted to go
Morris
to.
Morris Principium Est and Wolfheart show.
Yeah, that was another weekend show.
It was a Saturday. Yeah, you're right. And it was at Acadia Bar and Grill, which I remember going there a long time ago.
Yeah, I've never been there. That's it's on the north side.
1960 and something else.
Yeah.
I did enjoy it because they did have like $4 whiskey and Coke.
Uh-huh.
I was like, okay, I can deal with that. The opening band was one of your friends, Epic Death.
Yeah. Yeah. And I always feel really bad because like I go kind of way back with those guys.
Yeah.
Every time it seems like they're performing in Houston, I'm in Dallas, or I'm doing an event. Every time they're playing in Dallas, I like just came back from Dallas.
That was my first time ever. It was my first time ever seeing them live.
Yeah,
I gotta say they impressed the hell. I mean, they were really, really good.
I haven't seen them play live as Epic Death. I used to play shows with them in their old band, which
right.
I don't know if they want me to talk about, so I won't drop names.
Well, actually, we're gonna have them on soon. Okay. Either MSR Cast or Metal Geeks, maybe both.
Okay,
but we got to work it out with your schedule because I want you here for those episodes.
Yeah.
Because you're the one to introduce me to them.
Yeah, so. We're old friends.
Yeah.
Yeah, my old band and their old band, we used to roll around together a lot in the Dallas area.
But so. Check them out. They have their debut albums actually on Spotify mm-hmm. if you want to go listen to it. And they do a great cover of Alice Cooper's Poison, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
But the rest of the music is really good too. And then another local band, Drotten, who I'd never heard of before.
I've been hearing rumblings about Drotten recently.
I was introduced to them by Epic Death. The new singer was there. We got there sort of early, and I talked to him for like 15 minutes about bands and stuff like that. And he told me one of the bands that I had to miss a couple years ago is coming back, but I can't mention it yet.
Okay.
But I might have an autographed drum hit in this room of this band that I didn't get to see the show. But yeah, Drotten are really good. Very, very. They would fit if they wanted to bring a heavy metal band to the Ren Fair, the Ren Fest. Mm-hmm. They would work really well.
Okay,
they definitely reminded me of Monomars.
Okay,
which is not a bad thing. I was in a fucking great way. I'm looking forward to hearing more from these guys. Just being a local band, you know.
Yeah. I'm not going to get too far ahead, but George isn't here, so we're not going to have a George Hates Metal, but we're still going to have a similar topic. Are we doing another local band?
We are going to do another local band.
Well,
yes.
Yeah.
But since George is not here this episode, we still have to keep the tradition going, but it's going to be switching from George Hates Metal to Dave Loves Metal.
I do.
Yeah, I know.
It's true.
It's truth in advertising, folks. But so
we'll get to that though.
Yes. Wolfheart. Is the main reason I wanted to go. I'm a huge fan of, I think his name is Tomas.
Mm-hmm.
I never really know how to pronounce
that those Finnish names.
I know, right? Ever since Black Sun Aeon, been a fucking huge fan of this guy. And then Wolfheart, holy crap. I got to briefly meet the guy when he was at the merch table. He was like eating some food. I'm like, all right. But I bought a shirt, bought the vinyl.
Is he enormous? He looks enormous.
He is big. He's a big dude. Yes. But they put on a fucking hell of a show. They only got to play half an hour.
Yeah.
I was upset by that. I was like, man, these guys need a 45 minute to an hour set. They were really fucking good. They got the crowd into it. I think a lot of crowd was actually there for them.
Yeah.
If they, and I like Morris Prince of EMS a lot. If they had switched those two bands up in the set, in the order, I think it would have been a much better show. I don't know what happened with Moors. They were down a couple of people. There was no live keyboards and there was no live bass player.
Okay.
So, which is a thing, but there was a thing about like no live bass players recently for a couple of these shows, but they, in the song choices they picked, it wasn't like the most popular songs. It was like some deep cuts off albums. I'm like, okay, this is a very interesting set list for one of your like first times in America, you know?
Yeah.
It was weird. And they were good, but they didn't blow me away. Wolfheart fucking blew me away. That was worse.
They were the reason I wanted to go to that show, really.
Yeah.
Was to see them. And I only really got into them when T-Hoos came out last year.
How do you say it?
I looked it up. That's apparently how it's pronounced.
What is it?
T-Hoos.
Okay, I have no idea. We're talking about it on the MSR cast for like T-Jadas or whatever.
Yeah, it's those Finns.
Yep.
But yeah, I looked it up, and according to what I saw, it's something like T-Hoos. I'm probably butchering that, but
good. Good to know.
But
that album,
great album,
fucking blew me away. It was like it was in my top five last year.
Mm-hmm.
This new album's really good too. Constellation of the Blacklight. I don't know if it's as good as the album last year. It's different. Mm-hmm. It's heavier. It's faster. To Juiced, whatever. Whatever. We're going to say 2017's album. It was definitely more mid-paced and, you know, a lot more melodic pieces. Mm-hmm. But not to say the new album doesn't have that stuff in it, but it's a lot faster.
Okay.
I really like it, though. I bought a t-shirt from it, and I was really upset thinking, you know, you buy an extra large shirt, which I'm sort of in that between large and extra large area right now.
Mm-hmm.
You sort of going in expecting an extra large shirt, a European shirt, to be a little bit smaller. This shirt's like a fucking night shirt on me. It's huge.
Yeah.
I was like, God damn it. But then I bought a Morris Prince EMS shirt, which was an extra large, and it fits perfectly fine, you know? Yeah. Like, fuck. So, I don't know. Maybe I can shrink it in the dryer a little bit. I don't know. But
I don't know.
The headlining band, Karak Ingren, dude, they're really over the top theatrical.
Right.
They put on a fucking amazing show, and it was weird to see him in such a small little club.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, it was another night we had to leave early to take care of something at home. So we left about maybe 45 minutes into their set.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently after we left, they had this big, I'm trying to think of what the word, like a dummy on stage. And apparently the singer took a knife, cut it open, blood went everywhere at one point.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, oh, and I missed that shit. Great. Sean knows about it. He was there.
Okay.
That's pretty awesome. Another evil show that we went to a couple weeks later was the Behemoth tour.
Yes.
I got to say, dude.
I like that you call it. Yeah. It was such a huge show, like, that it was the Behemoth tour is almost weird. Like,
yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, At the Gates played this show.
Right.
And
I meant Behemoth as like it was a huge show. It was a behemoth of a show.
No,
not
you
the
didn't.
Band title.
No, you didn't.
I do now.
Okay. But no, it was the Behemoth headlining show. But it was just like, it was a little bit odd to me to see At the Gates opening for Behemoth. I'm happy with the lineup as it was. But
I do love eclectic lineups like that, though.
Yeah.
And Wolves in the Throne Room opened up the show. I was like,
I posted online, basically as soon as their set was over that the only complaint I had was that it was too short.
Yep.
And it was the same thing that you were talking about with Wolfheart 30 yeah. minute set. And a 30-minute set for Wolves in the Throne
like
Room
three songs.
Is really probably like 2.5. They probably went over
a little bit. Yeah,
but yeah, they played 3 songs. But it was incredible.
Yeah, it was
my first time to get to see Wolves in the Throne Room. I've been a fan of them for a while.
I think it was a good venue to see them in too.
Yeah,
if they got to play longer, I feel
I would love to see them headline a show. Really liked their set. So that was a treat. That was just a great night of music.
And you're wearing their shirt right now.
I'm wearing my Wolves in the Throne Room shirt right now. Yep. Then At the Gates played, and I had never had the opportunity to see At the Gates before.
I have never either in my entire metal career, you know?
Well, and I guess, you know, when they go on a 10-year hiatus, you know, kind of makes things hard. But they were great. Bringing the old school Gothenburg death metal. Our experience of the show was a little bit odd.
Right.
Because my wife had kind of suffered a minor injury. She's fine. But we had to get her, like, temporarily, we had to get her some ADA accommodations.
Right.
Because it was a standing room only show. She wasn't going to be able to do that. And we actually went through that with the same venue in the past, trying to see Behemoth again.
And they wouldn't help you at that time.
And they were not helpful at all last time. And she ended up having to miss Behemoth's set as a result. So this time we were a little bit more proactive and they were a little bit more helpful. And they put us up in the balcony, but there was nobody else up there. They weren't selling tickets to the balcony. So the only other people that were up there was occasionally a security guard, and then there was another couple who was up there for the same reason, the woman had some kind of back problem, I think. I don't remember what she said it was. But the guy that was with her, he had never heard of At the Gates before.
Oh, really?
He was converted by the end of their set. Like, he immediately ran downstairs and bought an autographed record. And
I should have done that. Should have bought the vinyl. Yeah,
he did. He went right down and bought it, and I think he bought a shirt and stuff. He was instantly converted, and he was like, I have never heard of these guys before. Wow. And I'm like, well, you've missed out.
Go back and check out Slaughter of the Soul, my friend.
Yep.
They were pretty fucking phenomenal.
Yeah, they were really good.
They played everything. I've been catching up with their the last couple albums. They're good. But yeah. They played everything you wanted them to play.
Yeah, they did.
They played Blinded by Fear. They played Slaughter of the Soul. And it was like, all right, they're hitting all the right notes.
They know what they're about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, if they don't, it's like, okay, we have to sort of play these songs. It's like they're, you know.
Especially with, I mean, they're somewhat recently reformed. I mean, it's been a couple years now, but still relatively newly reformed.
Is this the second album they've put out since they reformed?
By my reckoning, that's right.
Yeah.
What do you think of To Drink from the Night itself? I think it's great. I'm enjoying it.
I like it because it's, of course, there are some At the Gate typical moments, but they try new things on it,
mm-hmm.
and it's really good.
At the Gates, like, has a distinctive sound. But all of their records are a little bit different.
Yeah.
That's an interesting... That they're always able to be distinctively At the Gates, but a little bit different.
That's hard to do.
Yeah.
Especially for bands from that area.
Yeah.
There's some bands that did not survive.
Yeah.
And they just
have morphed so heavily that they're not even the same thing anymore.
They've gone down in flames is what we're trying to say. hey, when you name yourself that, it's eventually gonna happen.
Yep. It'll burn you.
It'll burn you. Let's talk about Behemoth.
Fucking great.
I've got to say, the new album, it's probably top 5 of the year for me right now.
I haven't decided yet.
It's very, very close for me.
It's good. It's... I'm still digesting it. I'm not entirely sure. I like it, but I'm still kind of working out what I really think about it.
I think it's one of their most accessible albums, too, for a sort of a non-metal listener. If you threw them on the new Behemoth, it's not so overwhelming like some of their older stuff. They'll be like, oh, I don't know if I can get into this. This is actually sort of cool. This is I can get into something like this. It's not so over the top. I'm trying to think of the right word, but disalarming, or you know what I mean? Or there's enough there for sort of just a regular metalhead or a non-metalhead to really get into.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's why they're becoming as big as they are right now.
Yeah. And I think I had a comment about that aspect of Behemoth after the show.
Yeah.
That you can tell they've kind of crossed over into more or less mainstream acceptance.
And I'm sure that Slayer tour helps and things like that.
Yeah,
they really put them in the front.
And unfortunately, there's just some things that come along with that. In terms of the quality of individual who shows up to their show, if you will. I'm not trying to be like a gatekeeper or anything, but I feel like a lot of times when this happens, you get tourists, if you will. You get, you know, and I don't
guys
know
that, in flip-flops.
I know that's kind of shitty of me, but people show up in a very touristy kind of way and act like asses. And that's really where my complaint is. I don't care who you are. You're welcome, as far as I'm concerned, to join the club. But don't be an ass. And unfortunately, a lot of times when this kind of thing happens, you get a lot of assholes.
Yeah. But see, you had a different experience. You
I
were
did.
Up.
I know.
You were up in the upstairs. I was surrounded by
assholes.
Idiots.
Yeah.
It wasn't that bad, though. It was a good show.
It was a good show. I thought their encore was a little bit odd.
I agreed on that. They picked songs that should have been near the encore for their encore.
Yeah.
Instead of like
really hammering home like big hits in the encore.
Yeah. And then it was like abruptly over. It was just like they walked off stage and was done.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I guess it's over. Lights came on. You're like, all right, it's over.
Yeah. And I was told...
Yep.
That they were going to play a full hour and a half, and they only played about an hour and 10 minutes. And so...
Really?
Yeah. And I wonder if they got cut short or something.
What night of the week? It was a weeknight,
well,
wasn't it?
It was like a Wednesday or a Thursday. Yeah. Something like that.
I don't remember what time it ended, but...
It ended at about...
11:30-ish?
No, it was supposed to end at 11:30, but they finished by about 11:10.
I know I was home by midnight-ish.
Yeah.
And I was in bed because I'm all to have work the next day.
So,
yeah.
But it seemed... I don't know if they got cut short, but it seemed kind of an odd ending to me.
Yeah.
That was my fourth or fifth time to see Behemoth. Twice,
I think me too.
Twice just this year.
Yeah, me too.
Behemoth is one of my favorite bands and has been for a long time.
Got my patch ready for my jacket.
Yep, there you go.
Got the old school logo.
And... I'm happy for the success they've had, and I'm kind of the opinion that, so I guess to kind of compare them to another metal band who's attained something like a mainstream acceptance at this point, but in a very different style, to compare them to, like, say, Ghost, who's have a lot of crossover.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Ghost, I've described... as making blasphemy fun again. Behemoth is making blasphemy interesting again. I think that they're doing really interesting work.
Did you read his book?
I have it on my shelf, and I will be reading it soon.
Do you have the hardcover or the soft cover?
Soft cover.
Okay.
Yeah.
I know the record label sent me like a promo a long time ago, like the digital book. But
well,
I lost the password, so
that
I can't
was another
get into
one.
It.
This is the one I have is not that same one.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because the one you're talking about, I remember, was like The Devil's Conquistadors or whatever.
This is
a different book.
Oh, I didn't.
It's a more recent one.
Okay.
I'm forgetting the name of it, the title of it right now. But
I'll have to check that out. There's another show coming here in April. Did you hear about this? The Hell's Heroes 2.
Yeah, I want to go see Visigoth, personally.
Visigoth, Cauldron, Omen, Skullfist, Hellstar, Exciter, Razor, and this band that seems to be getting on
everywhere.
A lot of fucking shows.
Everywhere.
TBA.
Man.
They play almost as much as TBD.
Yeah.
just gonna, which is the start of band, fucking call us TBD, and then we'll fucking just start going up, showing up to gigs. Hey, we're TBD, we're on the bill. Yeah. Wait, what? Nah. This is a good show. I mean, this is some classic metal right here.
Yeah.
If you're anywhere near the Houston area, you need to come down here for April. It's April 13th at the White Oak Music Hall. So I missed the show last year because it was right around a big work event getting into it, but I'm not missing this show.
Yeah.
And they usually, the White Oak Music Hall has two floors. So there's an upstairs and a downstairs stage. So I'm sure there'll be utilizing both stages for this.
Confessions of a Heretic, the Sacred and the Profane. That's the name of
That's the one I have on my Amazon wish list right now. Yeah.
That's the one that I have a copy of. I want to say the previous one was something like The Devil's Conquistadors.
Okay. Let's talk about this comic book real quick.
Okay.
While we're still in the metal mood.
Well, I have an additional concert to discuss.
You do?
That you did not go to.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Even though I had free tickets to it.
Yeah.
I totally forgot about it.
So this was 2 weeks ago tonight. No, 2 weeks ago tomorrow night.
Yeah.
Was Goat Horror headlining. They had The Casualties.
Right.
Black Tusk. What was the Great American Ghost? Who I'd never heard of before. And there was another band that opened, but I only heard like half of their last song, and I'm afraid I'm going to forget their name. What I heard didn't sound bad. I wish I'd heard more.
I set you up with a link for free tickets. I had free tickets for it. I took my wife to see Bohemian Rhapsody that night. I was walking up into the theater. I'm like, holy fuck. I have tickets to see Goat Horde tonight.
Yeah.
She's like, well, you could. I'm like, all right. I'll go home and eat some Goat Horror hot sauce. How about that?
There you go. It's basically, as far as my experience went, the first band I actually really got to see was Great American Ghost.
Never heard of them before.
I'd never heard of them before either. They're from Boston, I think, is what the dude said. And they were okay. I'm not sure how I'd describe them. I felt like they did a pretty good opening act performance. It's kind of, I don't know, kind of hardcore-ish, sort of. Wasn't bad. I need to look into them a little bit more. It was interesting enough that I felt like I'd give them a shot and check out more.
Revisit a little bit later, yeah.
Black Tusk played next, and they gave a great performance.
I think I've seen them live before.
This was my first time to see them, and fuck, they were loud.
I used to get them mixed up with Red Fang.
Yeah. Well, they're okay. If you know Red Fang, think Red Fang, but heavier.
Yeah, heavier and more southern sounding.
Yeah.
like Crowbar.
They're from Georgia.
Like a Crowbar crunch to it, you know.
Yeah,
yeah.
Very sludgy.
Yeah, sludgy.
Not slow like Doom, just
right.
That sludgy, dirty, you know,
I hate God.
Everything
and,
snarling at you, and fuck, they were loud.
Some COC.
Yeah, I liked their set a lot. They were really entertaining to see, and I would like to see them again. But then who probably surprised me the most was The Casualties. Holy fuck. I don't listen to a lot of punk,
right?
To begin with, these guys were I had heard of them before, but I never really listened to them. They're kind of a crossover, like punk metal crossover,
yeah,
sort of a thing.
I'm not too familiar with them either.
They were fucking awesome.
Really,
they were incredible. Their set was such high energy, and I know that this is largely like a punk thing, but I haven't seen anybody work a crowd like that since I don't know when. Their front man, and I'm gonna chalk a lot of it up to just that punk rock attitude, is he wasn't calling on the crowd to do certain things. he would do things, and it's like, here's what we're doing now. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. It's very participatory. He spent more time performing in the pit than he did performing on stage.
Sounds like a punk band.
It was something else, man. He worked that crowd like I haven't seen anybody do in a long time.
And I saw what your post, like, they invited everybody up on the stage.
Yeah. So, like I said, he spent most of the set down in the pit. So he climbs back up on stage, and then he flips the script, and yeah. He calls the crowd up onto the stage. And there was one security guy working the barricade, and he just had this, oh, fuck, look on his face, like, what do I do now? He just gave up, which was the only thing you can do.
So your hands in the air, like,
he just threw his hands up and walked over to the side, just like, fuck it, what are you
going to
do?
Speaking of, very close, I'll let you get to GoHo in a second, but I saw Suicidal Tendencies the months before.
Yeah.
And they do that at their shows. They invite everybody up in the last song, and they always put a fucking high energy show on. I've only missed them a few times since like the early 90s, yeah. You know, still love them. Their new album's not great, because mm-hmm. what they've done is they've basically taking one of Mike Muir's solo albums, the Psycho Michael solo album, mm-hmm. and re-recorded it.
Okay.
With a couple of other songs. But okay. it's not what I was wanting, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But it's still good.
Okay.
It's still a new album, sort of, in a way. But I don't remember how I got tickets to the show. I think the tickets were free. Okay. They were. Because I had like six tickets to that show. Nobody would go.
Okay.
Like, fuck it, I'm going. I almost didn't go by myself. I'm like, you know, I'm too old to go to a show by myself, but fuck it, I went. It was good. Good time. Got to hang out with DJ Metalord a little bit from mm-hmm. Now he's one of the hosts on Sweet Nightmares.
Yeah.
So that was fun. Let's go back to Goat Whore, though.
I watched most of Goat Whore set. We actually did cut out a little bit early. We left basically just before the encore. But we were all like super fucking fried. And so we cut out. But They were cool.
Is the first time seeing them?
No, I'd seen them once before, and I have been trying since that night. I have been trying to remember who I saw them with.
Wasn't last year, was it?
No, it was several years ago.
Okay.
And
they tour a lot. So.
They do, and they're from Louisiana, so it's not that far of a trek to make it over here. I cannot remember who I saw them play with, though. But I enjoyed them more this time than I did the last time I saw them. I think I enjoy them more overall now than I used to. I remember, you know, 10 plus years ago, listening to Goat Whore and not being real thrilled by it. And so I had kind of written them off for a long time. But their most recent couple of albums, I've recently gone back and checked out, and they're pretty good.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So
they've progressed a lot.
They have. I agree. So they were cool. I liked, you know, I would enjoy getting to see them, but they were not my favorite performance of the night. You know, nothing wrong with what they did. It was a fine show, but I felt like the Casualties and Black Tusk were more entertaining.
Wow.
Yeah.
Interesting to hear.
Yeah.
That's cool. I have to check out the Casualties. I mean, do you think if I'm a fan of like Suicidal Tendencies, like their punky stuff, do you think it was something I'd be into?
Probably.
You think is it more DRI crossover, like that type of stuff?
See, my punk and crossover knowledge is really limited.
Mine is too.
I don't know a whole lot about a lot of that. And a lot of it, frankly, doesn't appeal strongly to me. But like I said, these guys, very, very punk delivery, but a lot of thrash metal style guitar playing. So
there's a lot of crossover bands that we could probably get you into, because if you're just discovering it, you'd be like, it's a whole new world.
Well, like I said, it's just not something that has held a lot of appeal to me. A lot of punk bands that I've heard, I don't really dig. Even if I like the energy, I don't generally like a lot of the songwriting, but they're one I'm going to continue to check out, and maybe from there I'll have some frame of reference to get into some other stuff with a little bit better context.
Now, while we're still on the topic of metal, I want to talk about this new comic book that just came out on through Image Comics. Issue 2 is just out in stores this week, and it's a little comic called Murder Falcon. I made you read it before we recorded so we can talk about it. It's written by a guy named Daniel Warren Johnson, who also does a series called Extremity, who was actually a guest at Comic Palooza this past year. Mm-hmm. I wish I'd known that he was going to do this shit. And I've reached out to him, actually. We're going to have him on the show sometime soon. We just got to work out some logistics. But go to his Bandcamp page. I'll have to look up the exact address. But he writes music to go along with the comic book. Mm-hmm. It's pretty cool. So basic storyline, giant monsters are attacking the Earth, as they do. And the only way to kill these giant monsters is by the power of fucking metal.
In the presence of Murder Falcon.
Murder Falcon. Apparently. So
Murder, I guess more specifically, Murder Falcon is powered by metal.
Yes.
To destroy these. And he's apparently, so far, the only thing capable of destroying these monsters.
That is correct.
Yeah. That all of the police and military have been trying to no avail. But then Jake shows up with his magically restored guitar, which summons the Murder Falcon.
And pretty much.
It's about as ridiculous as it sounds, but there's like some heart in there. There's some more story that you can tell they're going to get into about where Jake is coming from.
And getting other people involved.
Yeah.
Some Blues Brothers shit going on.
Yep.
Getting the band back together.
So I imagine that just from the way that they're building the world, it seems, and the Murder Falcon actually alludes to it at one point, that there are apparently others like him from this dimension that he comes from.
Right.
Then they are also powered by instruments. And so I imagine before long we'll be seeing additional murder beings. I don't know.
Murder crows and more.
Metal Falcon is basically this like jacked up anthropomorphized bird with a giant like cyborg fist.
No, it's his whole arm.
I mean, it's his whole arm, but like that's his primary weapon, it looks like, is to punch these giant monsters, which come from a realm of hate and fear and despair, and only the power of metal can...
And they travel around in a 1980s-style van with orange stripes on the side.
Yeah, this very A-Team-style van. Yeah.
It's really good. Second issue is coming out this week, and if you go to your local comic book shop, ask for it. There's heavy metal homage covers, let's call them that.
Yeah,
the one that I got for the first issue, it's an homage to Judas Priest Painkiller. Mm-hmm. Even the logo for Murder Falcon is in the Judas Priest font.
Yeah.
Issue 2, it's an Iron Maiden Somewhere in Time cover.
Okay.
I don't know what's after that.
Have you seen it?
I have seen it.
Okay.
Yeah. I discovered this because we went to another the local comic book shops here in Houston. The ones that we go to is Bedrock City. There's one in near my house, and the manager that used to be at this store, we were out near downtown, so we went to the store near there and ran into him. He's like, "Dude, have you seen this?" I was like, "No." He's like, "I'm gonna grab it for you." He's like, "Oh, fuck, we're sold out of it." Actually, I'm like, "Really, dude?" And he's like, "You know, no, seriously, this has your name on it. This is yours, man. You got to get this." So he called my store and they actually had it in the store. So they put both versions of the comic, the regular cover and this cover, in my box. And I was like, "Yeah, I got to get this one." And then the guy that's checking me out, this guy that works at my location, he's like, "Yeah." When they called, he's like, "Yep, this definitely has Carrie's name on it." Like, all right. It's mine. I'm buying it.
What's the other cover for this one? Was it just kind of
just a regular cover? Yeah. I wish they like showed like all the covers inside, like some of the comics do. But but the artwork is really nice. It's very colorful. Very has a nice artistic style to it, which is not Image Comics. They tend to have like a real sick paper stock. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And the colors in it are they pop. There's a lot of reds and like purples and yellow and orange and stuff like that. So the colors really come off the page. I can't recommend it enough. If you're a metal fan and you're into comic books, pick up Murder Falcon.
Yeah.
Definitely.
It's kind of got that same sort of meta metal love that I felt like was going into like Brutal Legend, like that sort of feel where it's got kind of it's got kind of a sense of humor about it, but it's not parody.
It's not making fun of it. It's a nice homage for something that you can tell that Daniel Warren Johnson loves.
Yeah.
I'm trying to find out. He has a Bandcamp. So I'm trying to find out the exact URL for that so we can give it out. And we'll put that in our notes too on the website. But let me see here. This is where we need the Bandcamp. This makes it easy. Bandcamp.com/Daniel Warren. That it? Johnson. That's it. I thought it was going to be art because his website is Daniel Warren Art. But yeah, check it out. He has music on his page. You could buy it. It goes along with the album, whereas the comic. There you go. He's written Extremity for Image, Space Mullet with Dark Horse, and some other other comics too. So I briefly touched upon seeing Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yeah.
Do you have plans to see this?
Probably eventually.
I've seen it twice, apparently, now. Oh, well, yeah. Not apparently, but I have. I got to say, my wife loved the movie. And it's really good. The first time we saw it in the Dolby Surround theater at the AMC near here. And when they go into the end, not to spoil anything, but they do, they go to, at the very end, they do a recreation of Live Aid, right? Aid.
Yeah, I've heard that, yeah.
You could feel the fucking drums in the seat like a massage. It's great. The movie is really good, but go into it knowing it's a Hollywoodized version of the Queen story.
Yeah, I know that the movie's kind of gotten some shit for not making enough of a deal out of his homosexuality or like, and some of the things that he struggled with as a result of that.
Right. Like that, they touch upon it, but I mean, it's not a blatant in your face. Hey, I'm gay and this is my struggle, that type of stuff. It was more, they showed a little bit of it, but a lot of the focus of the movie was about the band.
Mm-hmm.
Even though, yes, the main focus was Freddie Mercury, they did have the band in the movie, but they didn't really go into their private lives that much like they did with Freddie. You know what I mean?
Okay.
But they do spend a lot of time on shit going on within the band, the dynamic in the band, touring cycles, album cycles, that type of stuff. So, I can see where people can say it's not the true story.
I think maybe it was more, the vibe I've gotten from some of the complaints is more that this was an opportunity to take someone as high profile and, I don't know, bring it into more of a mainstream conversation that it's a missed opportunity, I think is a lot of what the feeling was.
Okay. I guess
and I don't mean to
point
speak,
of view.
I don't mean to speak for people that have a strong opinion about it. It's just I'm rehashing some of the impressions that I've gotten from some of the stuff I've read about it. So,
all right. I will say I've always been a sort of a Queen admirer.
Mm-hmm.
I know all the popular songs. You know what I mean?
I'm kind of the same way. Never was like a huge fan in my own right.
Right.
Can definitely recognize the powerful contributions that band has made to rock and metal music, over the years. And they have been highly influential on metal music.
Yeah, definitely.
Lest anyone go, what are you talking about? They've been very influential, and God, what a fucking vocalist he was.
He was phenomenal. So I've gone back in the past week or so, or a couple weeks since I've watched the movie, and thanks to like Spotify, I've been able to listen to most of their albums in its entirety, which I've never done before.
Yeah.
And, you know, you get to the, oh, I know Keep Yourself Alive, and I know this song, that song, but there's some really good shit that I was never that I never heard before. And then you listen to like the album Bohemian Rhapsody is on, A Night at the Opera. And you listen to that album in its entirety, and it's such a prog heavy album, just the way it's progressive album and the way it's written and sequenced and stuff, that Bohemian Rhapsody really does fit and works really well.
I don't think I've ever listened to it in context.
It's a great album. A lot of their albums, I haven't got to their 80s stuff yet. I'm still going through some of the albums in the 70s. Even some of the live stuff they've done are really good. But Rami Malek is phenomenal. It's Freddie Mercury. I think he's great in the role, no matter what people think. People are like, oh, they should have had Sacha Baron Cohen, but I don't think he would have done the same job.
I haven't heard anybody saying that.
Well, he was originally attached to it.
Really?
Yeah.
I can see him looking like Freddie Mercury.
But see, he was originally attached to the story, to the movie, but he was fighting with Brian May and Roger Taylor on how the movie should be.
Okay.
So he backed out.
Okay.
And that's when they found Rami Malek, which is weird. Okay, this movie is directed, I'm using air quotes here, directed by Bryan Singer.
Okay.
Not the best director.
No.
But apparently, this is a story that I heard. They started filming like September, October. Holidays came around. He never came back from the holiday break.
Okay.
The director never came back.
I think they had
somebody else fill in, but since, I guess with the Directors Guild, and I'm not 100% sure on this, he filmed a certain portion of the movie, so he gets the credit.
Gotcha.
And the other guy gave up his directing credit.
Cool.
So, it's weird, but yeah, I definitely do recommend seeing the movie. And if you can see it in the theater, it's definitely a theater-worthy experience, especially some of the live stuff they do.
Mm-hmm.
There's some really cool shots. I got to say, there's one really cool shot where they're in Live Aid. Freddie's at the piano, and you see his feet, and the camera comes up through his feet and onto the stage into Brian May, into his guitar solo. Like, that's a really fucking beautiful shot. And
not a Brian Singer shot, is that what you're saying?
Probably not. That might have been done after he left. No, but apparently the first thing that they shot was the first day on set with Live Aid.
Okay.
And it's pretty amazing how they recreated it. Because I watched the actual Live Aid performance on YouTube after that, and it's fucking spot on, man. It's exactly – it's not the full 20 minutes or whatever. It's probably about 12 to 15 minutes. They cut a couple small things out, but, I mean, 15 minutes of your movie in a live concert setting, yeah, it's pretty cool.
That's a lot.
It's awesome. And, you know, Mike Myers is in the movie, of course. You've seen the trailer, right?
I don't know.
Okay, so there's the part in the trailer where record executive at EMI basically goes, he's a bearded guy, and it's Mike Myers.
Okay.
He's like, oh, 6 minutes, I don't know if the public can, you know, and then, you know, Freddie Mercury says, 6 minutes, if you think 6 minutes is too long, I feel sorry for your wife.
Okay.
That's a famous line from the trailer. But the other famous line is, he's like, I can see another song on the album, I can't remember what song he's talking about, being a song people can headbang to, but I don't see people headbanging to this song. He's talking about Bohemian Rhapsody.
Funny.
I'm like, okay, all right, you had me there.
Funny.
I know that it's a contrived line,
yeah,
but it's
yeah,
it fucking works. I'm sorry, it does. So the other, I saw a couple of the movies. I have that A-list pass, so I really utilize it this past couple weeks.
Yeah.
I saw Halloween.
Yeah, that's the last movie I saw in theaters.
Let's talk about that.
Okay.
It's fresh on my mind. It's a fucking direct sequel to the original 1978 movie, 40 years later.
John Carpenter says that, in as far as he's concerned, there's the original,
there's this,
and that's it. That the other movies don't factor into his vision of
Michael Myers. I can definitely see that.
Yeah.
Because
there was a funny, did you catch the, I don't know, it wasn't really a jab, really, but maybe kind of, at Rob Zombie?
No.
Did you catch it?
I remember when the three of the teenagers were walking around in the, sort of in the beginning of the movie, they were making fun of like sequels and shit like that?
They were talking about Michael Myers.
Yeah.
Because the girl's grandmother is Jamie Lee Curtis. And So they're talking about some of the urban legends about Michael Myers. And one of the urban legends is that she's his sister, that Jamie Lee Curtis is his sister.
And he talked about that being a contrived.
That's just a stupid, urban
legend. That's not real. That's not going to happen.
Right, yeah. And it's like, okay, that was a jab. it's not really a jab. It's just kind of...
That wasn't a Rob Zombie. That was like one of the Halloween movies, wasn't it? Like 3 or something?
I thought it was directed at Rob Zombie.
It might have been.
Because he did that. In the Rob Zombie movie, the main protagonist is right. The younger... She was the baby.
Right.
So that's what I thought that was.
Quick trivia question about the Rob Zombie Halloween movie. Which members of the Monkees was in that movie?
Fuck, I don't know.
Mickey Dolenz was in that movie. He owned the gun shop they goes to at one point.
I'm gonna have to watch that again. I actually didn't mind the Rob Zombie.
I didn't either.
It gets a lot of shit, but
I don't hate Rob Zombie movie though.
I don't either. I guess we're tangenting here, but I'm looking forward to 3 from Hell. I'm kind of curious to see what they're going to do with that after the end of the Devil's Rejects. But I thought the Devil's Rejects is probably the best of his movies that I've seen. I haven't seen all of them, but of the ones I've seen, that one's my favorite of his. But I liked his Halloween movie. I never saw his sequel to it.
I believe I saw the sequel.
Okay.
I don't remember it. So if that says anything.
Yeah.
So let's go back to this sequel.
Yeah.
Everything about this movie is a direct sequel to the original Halloween movie in tone, in scope, in the way the movie just starts with like the title sequence.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like, this is fucking made in the 70s.
Yeah.
The color scheme, everything about it, it's like a 70s movie.
Well, and it's got that John Carpenter music in it, you know? So, I mean, that's
not done by Trent Reznor sound. This time.
Yeah.
It's everything I wanted it to be. Everybody's like, oh, it's the comedy. I'm like,
it's a comedy.
People are like, oh, it's overly funny. I'm like, well, the original one had comedy in it too. Yeah. It's a well-rounded thriller movie. It's not a horror movie. It's not a slasher movie, even though there is that kind of stuff in it.
Well, John Carpenter does humor. Like he always has. And I think that John Carpenter understands that you need that comedic relief in order. You got to have a break or the anxiety stops being effective.
Exactly right.
You have to break that shit up.
Yep.
So, and I thought they did. There were some laughs in it. But I wouldn't call it a comedy.
No. I mean, I've heard people complaining about it. It was too much comedy in it. I'm like, well, it wasn't really.
No.
I mean, with Judy Greer, and I was expecting more a little bit, but she got typecast as the bitchy mom recently, hasn't she?
I guess. Yeah.
The Jurassic Park movie or Jurassic World movies, this movie.
Yeah.
There's something else she was in when she was like a bitchy mom. I'm like, damn.
I feel like you're right, and I can't place it either. But yeah, I mean, I'll tell you this. I wanted Jamie Lee Curtis to be my grandma by the time the movie was over.
She was a badass. Fucking the empowerment of women right here, man.
Yeah.
And I like the way the movie just fucking ended. It ended the way it should have ended.
Yeah.
I'm like, all right, they went there and there was like no extra shit. I was like, this is great.
Yeah. It left you with like, there's no question.
And we're not spoiling any of the ending here. So.
There's no question about like, okay, now what are the practicalities of the aftermath of this thing? Like, we're not even going to concern ourselves with anything.
There was a couple of plot twists I didn't see coming.
The doctor? Them? Oh, no, I saw that one coming from the beginning.
Did you?
Absolutely. Okay. Yeah, I saw it coming from the very first time he spoke. I'm like, oh, okay, I know where this is going. Yeah.
I know he was obsessed with Michael Myers, but I knew the podcasters were going to fucking get it.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, fucking podcasters, a movie, they're going to die.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Tusk, I mean, this movie.
Yeah.
At least they can turn into a walrus.
I still need to watch that movie.
Oh, dude, you haven't seen it yet?
No, I haven't watched it.
Oh, fuck. I really enjoyed Halloween. It was what I wanted it to be and not...
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the kills were fun. It wasn't overly, like, gory.
But it was brutal, though.
Yeah, it was brutal, but it wasn't like, we're going to spend a minute on this shot of this blood pouring out of like this orifice that was just...
No, there's something about the way that John Carpenter deals with violence, and I feel like at his best that Guillermo del Toro is the same way.
Mm.
The way that they deal with violence, where it's not over the top bloody. It's not about.
But it's unnerving.
It's not about, like, you know, Sam Raimi splattering blood on fucking everything.
There's no blood splatter on the camera.
There's something restrained about it that gives it to me a sense of realism.
Yeah, and it's, I was gonna say, it feels natural. Unnerving. Yeah.
It is unnerving. Yeah,
I agree.
So when, like, you know, when Michael's like smashing somebody's head against a wall. Like, you feel that shit.
Somebody could, like, do that to you.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's not like, you know, it's not like Nightmare on Elm Street, because that fantastical kills and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And some of that stuff cannot happen.
Yeah.
Even Friday the 13th later in the series. Yeah. You know,
Even the first Friday the 13th, thinking of how Kevin Bacon gets it in the first one, where she sticks the arrow like through him from behind or whatever. And it's like, it's a, you know, gory horror movie kill, but it's totally impractical.
I told you, I think we talked about this on the cruise, and we're talking about Friday the 13th. On that last cruise I went on, they had this like 4DX theater.
Yeah.
And at night they would show these, like, one of them was like going like a travel through like a haunted house type of deal. And the other one was the Marcus and the Spell Friday the 13th movie. It was like a compilation of the kill scenes from that movie.
Okay.
And the seats moved, and it was a 4DX. So, like, if there was blood splatter, you would get sprayed with water and that type of stuff. That was just, I'm like, it reminded me of that. Mm-hmm. And they're actually opening a 4DX theater here at the Edwards Marquee.
Mm-hmm.
Looking forward to when that opens, because I've always wanted to see a 4DX movie. They program the whole fucking thing to move along with the movie and effects. It's like being in a Disney park, but for like the whole movie.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking forward to that.
I don't know how I feel about that. I don't know if I need that for my movie watching experience.
It depends on what it is. It's got to be an over-the-top, cheesy action movie. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or like something where, you know, some kind of thriller, bad horror movie type thing, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm looking forward to trying it out, though. I'll probably do it once and be like, all right, that was sort of enough.
Yeah, probably.
I did see one other movie that I want to talk about.
What's that?
Overlord.
Yeah, I've been hearing cool things about it. I wanna watch it.
I
didn't know fucking anything about it until we went to go see Halloween, and there was a poster for it, and I'm like, what the fuck is this? And I hadn't heard shit about it.
It's exactly what you want it to be. It's a World War II movie. It's beautifully shot, I think. It feels like a World War II movie. There's enough character development where you care about the characters. It's not a Saving Private Ryan type of deal, but imagine Wolfenstein.
It seems very, I mean, the made color into, palette of the posters is Wolfenstein
it is.
Through and through.
Yeah. The whole, everything about the movie, it feels like a fucking video game.
Mm-hmm.
It's phenomenal. I had a fucking amazing time watching this movie.
Who's the director?
I don't know, but it was produced by J.J. Abrams.
Okay, he was producing, maybe that's what I was thinking of.
Yeah. I'm not sure who the director is, but wasn't any really big names in it. Ian DeCastaker, he's Fitz on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. He's in the movie. He's like maybe the only person you might know. Okay. Everybody else is sort of unknowns, but it's a perfect length. It feels like a fucking video game movie.
Yeah.
And
it looks like it.
You got to go see it in the theater, I think. And that's one of these movies that's not going to last very long, unfortunately.
Is it not?
I don't think so. Because even the first weekend, which was last weekend, we were having hard times finding some showing for it at some theaters, you know?
Okay, so the director is Julius Avery.
Okay.
Who has done nothing else that I've seen.
No.
So.
Well, there you go.
He's doing...
And it was a J.J. Abrams-produced movie that was not part of Cloverfield.
Yeah.
That we know of yet.
Ooh.
Ooh.
Interesting.
Right. Because there's some Nazi science going on in this movie.
Yep.
and you know, parts of it, you know what it felt like? I did feel Inglourious Basterds a little bit in this movie.
Okay.
I got that, you know, sort of the Quentin Tarantino-ish stylistic of a war movie.
Yeah.
Mixed with, like, a supernatural, you know, zombie movie.
This is Wolfenstein the movie.
It is
what I'm hearing. That's what, like, because that even the Tarantino thing is
totally.
Like,
if they just accidentally called one guy BJ Blazkowicz, I'd be like, all right,
yep,
there it is. That's the movie right there. But yeah, I definitely recommend seeing this theater in the theater. It's a lot of fun.
I'll have to see if I
actually want to see it again.
Here coming up soon. I don't know when I'm going to have time, but
I unfortunately have that A-list. I'm only allowed to see 3 movies a week on it. I have to wait till Friday before my movies this week restart.
Okay.
Like, God damn it. Because there's a bunch of movies coming out soon that I really want to see. I do want to see the Ralph Breaks the Internet comes out.
Yeah.
And possibly the Fantastic Beasts, but I'm not sure.
I enjoyed the last one.
I didn't hate it. I didn't love it, though, you know?
Yeah.
It was good, but it wasn't like the best Harry Potter situation, but this one,
it's weird because, like, I've only watched 3 of the Harry Potter movies.
I've seen them all.
Then I also watched Fantastic Beasts.
Yeah.
And so, like, I don't have full context of what everything,
I don't either,
who everybody is,
yeah,
and all that, but I enjoyed it anyway.
I don't know all the minutiae of all the characters and all that kind of
and
stuff
and how the world works,
yeah,
and all that kind of stuff.
And I've seen them, but I just don't, I guess I didn't pay enough attention. I didn't read all the books, so you know, people that are experts in this shit, I'm,
yeah,
not one of those.
I'm not either.
But, you know what? Let's move on to our, we're going to do a quick little topic, and then we are going to jam some metal, and we're going to end the episode. We'll,
okay,
be right, we'll be right back. Welcome back to the show. You want to do it?
I'm coughing over here.
Okay.
So, excuse me.
He's all choked up about
I
this,
am.
Man. So we want to do a quick topic this week. Unfortunately, we lost Stan the Manly this week, and we wanted to say a few words and maybe tell a few stories about Stan. He was definitely a legend. It doesn't matter what you think about him, about
and the Jack Kirby,
the whole
thing.
Jack Kirby
Let's
thing.
Not concern
we're not
with
we're not
here.
Talking about that. Everybody got the credit they deserve. Blah blah blah. Who cares? I had the privilege of meeting him twice, both at Comic Palooza, in two different, completely different circumstances. The first was waiting in line to get his autograph. Mm-hmm. So the piece of artwork that's right by your head, I have an Arsa Sweden print of Stan Lee with all his characters that he created or co-created around him as zombies.
Mm-hmm.
And I brought him that autograph, and he looked at it. He looked at me, and he's like, "I love this piece. I've never seen this before." And he showed it to one of the guys that I was working with, and the guy that I was working with, his handler or whoever, his manager guy. He's like, "Stan, you've seen this before." He's like, "Don't tell him that." I was like, "All right, that's great." That's the kind of
those are
humor.
The kinds of stories that I hear about. I've never met Stan Lee, but those are the kinds of stories that I hear about him, that he always made whoever he was talking to,
yes,
feel important.
Exactly. He did. Everybody, no matter if you're a celebrity, if you were just a fan, no matter who you were,
mm-hmm,
if you were in his presence, you were important to him enough. And he was a funny guy.
Mm-hmm.
He liked to be sarcastic and liked to tell jokes, apparently.
Yeah.
The second time I met him was working at Comic Palooza. We had him in 2014 and 2015. I can't remember which. I think it was 2014. Because the first year, I don't think I got his autograph. And after his panel, the whole marketing department, which is like a bunch of people, we were all going to get a picture with him, right? Is a photo. I don't know where this photo is. I have to find this. But we were on like this three-tiered stage setup.
Mm-hmm.
He was right in front of me on the front row. Our marketing director at the time decided she wanted to jump in the photo, and she jumped in and bumped into Stan. And he was already, you know, a 90, 91-year-old
yeah,
man.
Right.
already sort of frail and fragile, bumped into him. He went flying back. He was right in front of me. It was like slow motion. I put my hands out like that, stopped him from falling backwards. He stopped. He looked at me, and he's like, "You're my Spider-Man." I was like,
"Oh,
all right, that was awesome." I was like, "That's it. That's perfect. That's all I need right there."
That's amazing.
He said, "Thank you." He said, "You're my no." He didn't say, "You're amazing." He said, "Spectacular, amazing, whatever." All the adjectives that he comes up with.
Yeah,
That was a cool moment. That was a really fucking cool moment. But, you know, he probably doesn't remember me he would never remember who I was, but I remember that moment. Sure. That's all that matters. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think that's what's so cool about him. You hear all these stories about working with him, blah, 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 but he was nice to his fans. He cared about what they thought about him. Cause he knew that's what made his career.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I've seen all these outpouring of, you know, memories from everybody this past few days, and they all say the same thing, that he was a great man. So, and he was my childhood dude. I got to say, my uncle tried to get me into DC, gave me a bunch of Batman comics, a bunch of Green Lantern stuff, but it was always the fucking Marvel stuff that I went back to. And
yeah,
and he was the reason why is he created all those characters that I fucking still love and the world loves now due to the movies.
Yeah.
And when I turned 13, when I had my bar mitzvah, my grandmother my aunt wanted to buy me 100 shares of a stock. She wanted to teach me about, you know, stocks and stuff like that. So she's like, "What do you want?" I was like, "Well, I want Marvel Comics. I'm really into Marvel Comics. I want stock in Marvel Comics." But this is when, so I was 13. So this has been like 87, 88, mm-hmm. something like that. They weren't doing well.
Right.
So they weren't even a lot of the, that's when, you know, they were selling off character rights and all this kind of stuff. And at that time, New Line Cinema owned Marvel Comics.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, so buy me New Line Cinema stock. Cause I want to own part of Marvel Comics.
Yeah.
And that's what I got.
Yeah.
I don't have that stock anymore.
Damn
but
it.
That's a story for another time, not on the air. I won't get into that right now, but I wish I still had that stock because I could have sold that a long time ago and not worked for a good long while. You know what I mean?
Yep.
But yeah. So I mean, what do you have any stories? And anything you want to mention?
Nothing. I mean, I don't have any personal stories.
Doesn't have to be personal.
But yeah, I guess one of the things that he's often credited heavily for is the bringing of something like real personalities to superheroes.
Yes, and for totally.
Me, like my overall all-time favorite superhero is Batman, a DC character.
Okay.
But overall, I've always enjoyed Marvel better. I have never been as into comics as you have or as George has. I was into them real heavily briefly for a couple of years as a teenager.
Yeah.
But I couldn't keep up.
It's hard to keep up. Still is.
And I still really appreciate the art form. I still read stuff from time to time and value a lot of it. But for me, the Marvel characters were always more interesting
and were more relatable.
More, yes, maybe that's what I mean. More relatable.
Yes, I totally agree. Because growing up, not as much anymore in the comics, but growing up, my favorite character was Spider-Man because Peter Parker was an everyday guy. Mm-hmm. He just happened to get bit by a spider and had superpowers. I mean, he was smart, blah blah blah, but he had problems like everybody else in the world.
Mm-hmm.
When, you know, I was growing up, his high school problems, same kind of shit that I would go through. And now, you know, there's been periods in the comics where he's having money problems. He has, you know, problems with girls. And you know, he has problems that everybody else in the world has. Now, some of the DC characters, even some of the other Marvel characters are not relatable in that way.
Yeah.
I can't relate to what Logan goes through in life or Captain America most of the time, you know, but there's characters that are so down to earth, like Spider-Man. And he, like a lot of people, Spider-Man, Peter Parker, uses wit in sarcasm and being funny to combat a lot of his personal demons and personal problems. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And a lot of people can relate to that.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, Spider-Man.
I feel like the Hulk is even a relatable character on that level. That I mean, everybody yeah, gets, sure, Banner's yeah. Banner's a brilliant scientist, et cetera, that most of us will never be. But
that's not true.
But but as far as that feeling of I'm angry and I can't help myself.
He's helpless to the anger.
Yeah,
everybody has that feeling. Everybody, and yeah, I agree. A lot of the characters that Stan Lee created in route are definitely relatable in that aspect. And I think that's what made them, they're more human. They were more down to earth. Even when they came down like sword down to earth. But I mean, Superman had, of course, still has problems. Don't get me wrong. Some writers, at DC and are able to take or put a lot of humanness into those characters.
How much of that was a reaction to
possibly true
to that to this move, though?
But you look at Clark Kent. He had problems too. You know, he had his secret identity. But like people, I can't relate to Bruce Wayne. I'm not a billionaire. His problems outside of being Batman, they were not relatable to somebody like me.
Yeah. But I guess to hit on the two big ones from DC, right? So as a kid,
yeah,
I didn't really like when I was a little kid. I liked Superman.
Yeah,
everyone likes Superman because he can do whatever he wants.
Right,
cool. Everyone wants, you know. But when I got a little bit older, Superman kind of lost all appeal for me for a while.
Yeah,
because he was so unrelatable that his power just makes him just beyond anything that you can relate to.
I agree, because I think being – okay, so as his alter ego, Clark Kent, I don't think he sort of acts like that character. He doesn't really have those problems in a way, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It doesn't really matter to it.
Because Clark Kent is the mask. Clark Kent is the – and really –
Kal-El is the real person.
Bruce Wayne's kind of the same way.
Yeah.
I feel like that for Batman, he primarily identifies as Batman, not as Bruce Wayne. He eventually gets to the point where Bruce Wayne is itself a mask for Batman to wear, rather than Batman being a mask for Bruce Wayne to wear. To me, as when I got a little bit older, he became more interesting in that aspect. Because of now, of course, I can't relate to being an orphaned billionaire child with an Alfred.
Are you sure?
I can't. No, can't relate.
You fooled me.
But but the kind of human morality questions that Batman dealt with are, to me, I think are at least somewhat relatable. Of course, we're not, you know, all like vigilantes and shit, but the way that he goes about the process of him figuring out what his moral code has to be in order for him to function this way. Because Superman has a very easy moral code, and it's easy because he's so powerful that it can be easy.
Right.
Again, making him unrelatable. Where Batman became more relatable for me as a teenager and all this kind of stuff is because he's actually dealing with an ugly, gray world.
Yeah.
And he has to decide what is my moral code going to be. And that's something that everybody really does have to kind of figure out.
And he does have a relatable backstory because people lose parents, they lose people close to them, and people can relate to that.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to make people vigilante. But let's go back to Stan Lee real quick. So,
but what I was getting at, the way that was tying in, was I feel like a lot of the real personal problem stuff that even those characters stepped into were influenced by what Stan Lee did to the comic book genre.
Right. So
the superhero comic genre specifically.
Speaking of Stan Lee and DC Comics, there was a series that came out in early 2000s called Just Imagine. So it was basically Just Imagine Stan Lee writing these DC comics.
Okay.
So, and here's one of the covers right here. So Stan Lee with Joe Kubert doing Batman. These are really, I remember reading these when they came out. They were awesome. So he does Batman with Wayne Williams, and he changes a little bit, everything a little bit, you know. Okay. Cause he, fucking Stan Lee loved the alliteration.
Yeah.
He did. He was a master of that. Peter Parker, Bruce Banner. Mm-hmm. Trying to think of who else. Steve Rogers is not one of them, but.
Well, I feel, did he kind of get that though from, I'm going to blank on their names. The guys who created Superman, because so many of the Superman characters,
Joe Schuster and Jerry Siegel.
Yeah. Siegel and Schuster. Yeah. Cause a lot of the Superman characters are the same.
Lois Lane. Yeah.
Lois Lane, Lana Lang, Clark Kent, you know, you have these alliterative names, and I've always kind of felt that he was
maybe influenced by that.
Yeah.
Cause it was 25 or 30 years before, you know, Stan Lee was creating Marvel characters.
Mm-hmm.
So he did Batman, Wonder Woman, Superman, Green Lantern, The Flash, Robin, Shazam, Aquaman, Catwoman, Sandman, JLA. Yeah, there's a lot of good stuff. And I think there is a trade paperback of all that stuff put together.
Oh, that's cool.
And it's an interesting read. It's fun. I have the original. Back in the early 2000s, when like a little graphic novel was like a self-contained $5 book, you know mm-hmm. what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. But who is your favorite Stan Lee Marvel character?
Fuck, I don't know. That's all. I don't know. I don't know that I have one. I don't know if I can answer that question. You said yours is Spider-Man. Yeah.
I think so. I love the X-Men.
I do too. That was X-Men was really probably my introduction to comics.
Yeah, me too.
It was X-Men.
Yes. Spider-Man and X-Men for me. So he has an illustrious list of fucking characters he's created, co-created, don't get me wrong. Spider-Man, the X-Men, Iron Man, Thor, the Hulk, Fantastic Four, Black Panther, Daredevil, Doctor Strange, Ant-Man. I mean, these are all characters 50, 60 years later that are making million-dollar movies that nobody would ever have thought about that. When I was a kid, I never thought we were going to fucking have an Ant-Man, two Ant-Man movies, mm-hmm. or a fucking Spider-Man movie like this, or an Avengers movie, for God's sake. I mean, it wasn't in the cards.
No.
We were like, oh, we have a Blade movie. Okay, we're cool. That's our superhero movie, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
For Marvel, at least, you know? But yeah, it's visionaries like, you know, Stan Lee and Walt Disney and a bunch of people that create everything that we fucking love, and now Walt Disney owns it all, but the company does, at least.
Yep.
Yeah. But I wanted to take this few minutes and give our thanks and respect and the way that we know how, and I know everybody out there is doing the same thing. And, you know, we knew he was sick for a little while. His wife died recently, like last year.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's been sick, and it was an inevitable, thing. He was 95.
95 years old.
It's a good life.
He had a
good run. Big bucket of wind.
That's one way to put it, I suppose. Yeah. And was, for all we know, it just seemed like he was smiles and gratitude all the way to the end.
Yep. He's touched almost everybody's life, no matter where you are in the world. Exactly. No matter where you are in the world, your life has been touched by Stan Lee. So thank you, Stan the Man Lee. And I think the last thing we have to say is what?
Excelsior.
Excelsior.
And so that was Will's dissolve.
Poor Will. They're always firing at Will. He makes his dissolve go down.
So you just found out about them recently as well, right?
Yes, we played them on the last MSR cast. I discovered them by Josh Rundquist, that drummer guy.
Me too.
He posted about him. I'm like, he's like, oh, this is a cross between Opeth and Swallow the Sun. I'm like, that sounds perfect. I listened to it, and so I clicked on the Bandcamp. I'm like, Bandcamp page. I'm like, these guys are from Houston. What the fuck?
Yeah, it took a guy from Minnesota to let us Houstonians
know, right?
About this band in our own backyard.
That's right. So let's talk about them.
It's like.
Oh, by the way, this segment is not George Hates Metal.
Yeah.
It's Dave Loves Metal.
I do.
And Carrie, and me too.
And I've listened to this album, I don't know, 3 or 4 times over the last couple weeks. And it is. It's kind of old school Opeth. There's some Swallow the Sun, some there's Enslaved.
There's some November's Doom.
Yeah, November's Doom.
The first song definitely has a
little Hassan kind of progginess, that style of progginess to it. Cool as hell, and I never even knew these guys were around.
I know.
So,
and I've reached out to them. I bought, if you go to their page, it's willsdissolve.bandcamp.com. You can get the digital version for like $5.
Their name comes from an Isis song.
Okay.
If you know the band Isis.
I can definitely hear some Isis in the band,
too.
Yeah,
there's some of that in there, that kind of post-sound.
Post-metal, whatever you call it.
Yeah.
Post-punk.
So yeah, that's where their name comes from.
Okay, makes sense. Yeah, they're a phenomenal band. So when I reached out to them, and I'm gonna get them to come on and do an interview with on MSRcast, local guys, so should be easy. I'm really digging these guys. There's a lot of good local bands that I've been discovering recently, which is great.
Yeah.
Speaking of Dauber from Oceans of Slumber has a new band, black metal band.
Necrofire,
yeah.
I'm looking forward to seeing their debut show.
With Uada.
Yep.
Which is a free show, I think, too, isn't it?
I believe it is.
Yeah, so.
I think it's December 9th at White Oak Music Hall.
Yep. Uada's only come here like 5 times this past year. It's been my first time watching them, so.
I heard they've come through a lot. I hadn't really been paying attention to them until a few weeks ago, but
oh really?
Yeah,
they're great.
Impression that I've gotten is people are tired of seeing them.
That's what I get too. But I haven't seen them yet, so I'm not tired yet.
I haven't seen them yet either. So.
I know Sean went and saw them one time.
Yeah,
our co-host on MSRcast went and saw them. So, have you been getting anything recently besides Will's Dissolve?
At
willdissolve.bandcamp.com, go buy the album. Well, let's talk about the album real quick. It's called The Heavens Are Not on Fire is the name of the EP.
Yeah. And all of the song titles are, they all kind of flow together into like a single idea. So you have.
Track number 4 is On This Cold November Night.
Which is appropriate.
For now.
The song titles are The Heavens Are Not on Fire. So do not mistake these ashes for signs from on high on this cold November night. So that's kind of a cool idea.
And then the last one is 11/13/1833,
which I don't know the significance of that. So.
It's got when we have them on the show, we'll find out, because this is definitely some kind of concept right here.
Yeah, yeah.
Very cool. And the album cover definitely reminds me of like, you know, Travis Smith type of, you know, album cover. Mm-hmm. Something that you would find on the aforementioned band, you know?
Yeah.
Really cool stuff. What have you been getting into recently?
Mournful Congregation.
Yeah?
Yeah. Never really got into them before.
Some slow doom metal?
Really slow doom metal, yeah.
I mean, sync slow, and then
slower than that. Yeah.
Yeah. Take like your 33
like
RPM.
My Dying Bride.
Yeah.
And then, if you need to bring the mood down a little bit, go to Mournful Congregation.
You know when Typo Negative got really slow, deep and hard?
Slower than that.
Yeah. No, totally. Even Swallow the Sun, when they do some really slow, dirgy shit. Yeah. Slower than that.
Yeah. No,
that should be their album title.
Slower than that. But yeah, I found, we were talking about Bandcamp a little while ago. I like, one of the things that Bandcamp does is they put out these articles every so often where they get into the history of a certain subgenre of metal or whatever.
Oh, really?
And yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, you should check it out. Follow them on Facebook and
Bandcamp?
Yeah.
Okay.
And they'll put out these articles from time to time. They'll do like, you know, here's the best of metal for the month. And they'll highlight some bands that you probably haven't heard of and that had new releases this month or whatever. But then they'll also do these kind of retrospectives of here's a crash course in this subgenre.
Metal Bandcamp? That's what it is?
Metal, yeah.
Is that it?
Yeah, I guess so. I guess that's it.
I liked it.
They had one on the history of Funeral Doom. And that was one of the more recent ones that I read. And,
oh, cool.
So they had like Skepticism in there.
Yeah.
And
not a lot of people like them.
I was not really familiar, and so I checked out some of their stuff. I like that stuff as well, but the Mournful Congregation, which was also in this article, is a little bit more, accessible, maybe? A little bit more traditional in the song structure, even if they're, like, really fucking slow. So yeah, I've been getting into that. Who else have I been listening to recently?
I'll tell you, the new Vreed album, phenomenal. The new Brainstorm album, really, really, really good.
Yeah.
Really catchy. Really, I think they've taken their sound to the next progression. So I'm excited for that album a lot.
Let's see if I can.
Queen, I've listened to a lot of Queen.
I've been listening to some other stuff. New Brimstone Coven album is out.
Yeah.
It's pretty good. Man, the new Hate Eternal and the new Bloodbath.
Bloodbath,
are both pretty kick-ass.
I've listened to two tracks from Hate Eternal. I haven't listened to the full album yet.
It's pretty good.
So with the new Deicide, which is really fucking good.
I've never been a huge Deicide fan.
Really?
Yeah. I don't know. I've never really been able to get into Deicide.
Gamma Bomb, the new Gamma Bomb album.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to remember the name of it. It's the Speed Between the Lines album.
Okay.
Fucking great. If you like, it's an Irish band. If you like old school, like crossover thrash, you would dig these guys, and their videos are fucking great. Let's see. Who else have I been listening to? The new Throzenblatt. Have you heard them?
Mm-mm.
So, Throzenblatt, it's, they rose from the ashes of Wood the Vipray.
Okay.
So, it's Ray Amatre and, Joel Violet. But this new album that just came out in 2018 called Great Brunswick Forest, and it's sort of a, I don't want to say acoustic album, but it's low key. You know how like Bortnagar did that sort of acoustic style album?
Mm-hmm.
But they still use natural drums and there was a little bit of guitar and stuff like that. That's what this album is. And it's really fucking good. There's one song on there that I mean completely sounds like Wood the Vipray.
Hmm.
That's definitely recommend that. What else does he have on here? The new Hate Eternal right here. Let's see. There's a band called Manimal that I've listened to recently.
Okay.
Which are really good. And the posthumously released World Dane Shadow Work album.
I haven't listened to that yet.
Really good. It's Nevermore, dude.
Yeah.
Yeah. He had a great band backing him on this. We're actually waiting for the vinyl to come in the mail right now. That's a whole story.
I heard about that.
Yeah. You heard me bitching about
it. I did. this one isn't a new one, but excuse me, looking through my my recent listening, this is one that ever since I found them, they keep coming back through, and I don't remember if I've ever talked about them on the show or not.
Mm-hmm.
A band called Akhlys, A-K-H-L-Y-S.
Mm.
As far as I know, they only have one album, and it's called The Dreaming Eye.
Wouldn't that be Achilles?
It's not Achilles.
Damn it. It's
Achilles. And this album's 3 years old at this point, but I fucking love this album. Said it's called The Dreaming Eye, and the whole thing is this kind of atmospheric black metal deal, and the whole thing is kind of about I guess about dream divination. It's got kind of an Austin Osmond Spare sort of a feel to it, if you know who that is. This kind of like psychonaut sigil magic kind of voyage into these bizarre dreamscape places.
Interesting.
And I fucking love this album, and I keep listening to it. So if atmospheric black metal is your thing, check them out.
I'm always down for that, especially this time of the year.
Mm-hmm.
I think that'll do it. We love metal. It's proven. We're proving it tonight, I think.
Yep.
So let's talk about our sponsor real quick. Do you want to do that?
Yes.
Let's hear it.
Tantrum Collectibles.
Yeah.
Go check them out for all of your vinyl toy needs. And you can get money off your order.
Money? How much money?
It's a percentage that I believe is 10.
That would be the correct percent.
We wouldn't be a plug if we weren't fucking it up, right?
Nope.
So 10% off Metal Geeks is your code at tantrumcollectibles.com.
And they have if you're looking for cool things like Funko Pops and Bandai, Artifacts, Band Presto, all those cool statues that you've always wanted, now you can get 10% off.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Do you have anything you're looking forward to? Now, this is George's usual section, what's tickling or your geek.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have anything?
Looking forward to the month of December.
Yeah?
Things will finally calm down for me for a little while. So that'll be nice.
Spend some time with the fam.
Yeah, I am looking forward to... God, there's a lot of concerts already lining up.
We've mentioned some of them already.
Yeah.
Is there anything coming up in December? There was Stephen Wilson's coming here.
Okay.
That'd be fun. I'm trying to think. There's something else in December. I can't remember what it is, though. There's a lot of shows.
I just was thinking about it earlier today. Like, we're not getting a Star Wars movie this December.
Nope. We're not.
And, like, that just hit me. Earlier today, I'm like,
it's going to be a weird...
It's kind of weird.
That's been our Christmas tradition. We'll get up and go see Star Wars movie on Christmas Day and then go to the family's house.
Yeah.
It's not going to be that way this year. I don't know what's out on actually Christmas Day. Mary Poppins is coming out.
Okay.
That could be interesting. Are you a fan of the original?
I guess so. I never really loved that one as a kid. I appreciate it more now for its historical value, I think. Because it was a historic movie for a number of reasons.
Oh, yeah.
But it wasn't one that really spoke to me as a kid. But I think I have more of an appreciation for it now than I did.
Speaking of Disney, I'll tell you what's tickling my geek, what I'm looking forward to. And we're only 2 months away. Kingdom Hearts 3.
Oh, yeah.
Finally coming out, January 29th. So we're about three months away.
That's what they're saying.
That's what they're saying.
We'll see.
But they said that 8 years ago, too.
Yeah.
No, it's actually coming out. There's been a new trailer that had, like, Winnie the Pooh in it, which is sort of cool. Which I saw Christopher Robin the other day. I rented that.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting.
Yeah.
Have you seen it?
I haven't.
It's a fine family movie. They're a little creepy though.
Okay.
The way they're animated, it's creepy. Okay. How they interact with like the real world and stuff. I don't know. There's something weird about it.
I thought in the trailer that Pooh looked a little bit weird.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I guess he kind of looks like if you remember in the old movies, there were the live action intro sequences, mm-hmm. where nothing really happens. That's more like they're just kind of showing you Christopher Robin's room,
right?
And the characters are in there. That's actually what that poo kind of looks like.
Yes, it's so, that real world stuffed animal version,
mm-hmm.
With not like the mass produced stuff you get like at Disney World, like the
kind of a handmade quality.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Hand stitched. You can tell it's a fun movie. It's not the best, but I was never a huge Winnie the Pooh fan. I just never got it as a kid, I guess. I don't know. We watched them, but it was like, eh.
I really liked the animated movie they did a couple years ago.
I don't know if I saw that.
It was pretty good. I liked that one.
Hmm. I mean, if you're looking for a movie to watch as a kid, you know, this is probably a good one to rent. I think they would still enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
But moving on, I think it's time to go to bed. I'm tired.
Fair enough.
Let's move on. Let's talk about where you can find us. Of course, you can find us on all the social medias at Metal Geeks on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. You can find us at all the places you want to subscribe to us at, on Stitcher, on Spotify. You can listen to us now, and on iTunes. Find us on iTunes, subscribe to us there, give us a review, give us whatever rating you want. We just want to know you're listening. And if you have a request for the show, if you have something for George Hates Metal, you have something, a topic you want us to touch upon, msrcast@gmail.com. Now, where can they find you?
You can find me at Red Viking Dave on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. And that is primarily artwork that I'm working on, and occasionally some more metal-related stuff, concerts, and you know, updates to the Battle Vest and that kind of thing.
Which I've been working on my Battle Vest too. I have all the pieces for it. It's just finding the time now to put it all together.
Mm-hmm. That's what I've been doing. I've been collecting for like the last year, and so now I'm to the like really put it together.
Yeah, my Facebook thing yesterday came up. No, 2 days ago, saying it's been 1 year since when I bought my Battle Vest. And I'm like, oh, okay. I really need to finish it then.
Yeah, I got mine for Christmas last year.
That's right.
And so I've been like slowly collecting patches. I've been going to shows.
You got a shitload on there though.
I do now, and I've got still about that many still to put on.
Oh,
so
wow,
yeah.
You got a whole back left to go, man.
I do have the whole back left to do, and I will, as discussed earlier, I'm going to be putting some of my artwork back there.
I didn't tell you the story about my battle jacket real quick. So on the back of mine, I have a big Anthrax patch, and I have a huge Halloween logo mm-hmm. over the top, right?
Yep.
When we went to go see Bohemian Rhapsody the first night, I was waiting for my wife to get out of the bathroom, and these guys came up to me. They're like, oh, I love your jacket. And they're like, we just saw the movie. I'm like, what movie? Oh.
Halloween.
I was like, no. Oh, okay. It's not Halloween. It's Halloween. And I got the same thing when we were in Chicago. Right after we saw Halloween, I was wearing a Halloween t-shirt that I bought at the show.
Yeah.
We were walking around. Somebody came up to us and said, I can't wait for Halloween to come around. I was like, all right, dude. Good for you. But yeah, there you go. So be careful what you put on the back of your jacket then. That's my point.
Okay.
You don't want strangers coming up to you and saying the wrong thing.
Well, I'm going to put my artwork back there, so people are going to say weird things about it.
I agree. You should put your artwork and your website and your contact information, all that kind of stuff, all your social media handles.
Yeah.
Make it a walking advertisement.
Why not?
Fuck it. Why not, right? So I guess we could mention George's stuff real quick, right? At George Tripsis, and what's the other one? His comic book company with Justin?
Grey Bear.
Is it at Grey Bear? When he's not here, we don't know the shit. We don't really listen to him when he talks.
Well, it's like I already follow him, so
I know.
Like, I don't have to go looking. It's like I don't have to remember your phone number. It's in my phone. So
I looked up Grey Bear Twitter, and the first thing that popped up is at Grizzly Bear.
No.
I don't think that's it.
No.
This is where the silence
Grey Bear Comics is the Instagram.
Okay.
G-R-A-Y.
Yes.
Not G-R-E-Y. I don't know why they chose to spell it incorrectly, but they did.
Because they're British or something. I don't know. But just Google Grey Bear Comics. When he comes on, he can talk about it next time.
Fair enough.
Let's do that. So there's a couple things I want to say at the very end of the show. Number one.
Keep it metal.
Number two.
Keep it geeky.
Number three.
Excelsior.
You got it. Thank you.
Hey, Geekazoids. Thanks for listening to another fine podcast brought to you by MSR Productions. All rights reserved, blah, 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 blah. For reviews, archives of our podcasts, and all your other metal geekery needs, please visit metalgeeks.net. Keep it geeky. Keep it metal. Previously on Podcasserole.
Glomer is one of the most underrated cartoon characters of all time.
Some call Glomer the Jar Jar of the PBU, you know. I haven't stepped foot inside of a Subway since, really.
And neither is Jared.
It's true.
You're over at my home every week. Is there a meth lab here?
Not a big one.
I choose him, the one called Kirk. I'm freaking James T. Kirk.
Find out more about Podcasserole now on iTunes, iHeartRadio, and Google Play. And don't forget AdamandJP.com. and the ESO Network.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at ESONetwork.com.